Good morning, everyone. How are you? I'm going to be talking about something a little bit different, but also trying to make some linkages back to the theme of youth at the end. And the theme of this will be about public health and severe coastal storms. And I was just wondering, for starters, has anyone here in the room was in the New York area during Hurricane Sandy, by any chance? Okay. And anybody have any thoughts on the specific tasks that a public health agency would need to carry out during a severe coastal storm? Any suggestions? Okay, evacuations. Any others? Recovery. Okay, maybe one more.
Surveillance.
Well, these are all primary themes, and also themes that the public health agencies themselves were constantly in the process of working out and conducting a lot of problem solving in order to get it right. And that's what this presentation is going to be about. I'm also listed on here is Dr. Benita Panigrahi, who is here in the audience, who was instrumental in doing several of the interviews for this, and also Dr. David Abramson, who is a co-PI on the study. And the official title is The Evaluation of the Public Health System Response to Hurricane Sandy in the New York Metro Area. And I do not have any disclosures. I see financial isn't there, but no disclosures to report. So for starters, Hurricane Sandy was a real outlier of a storm that many of the public health agencies in the New York region did not initially consider a threat, and the path of it was very unpredictable and not on everyone's radar. It was 1,000 miles long, stretching from Canada to North Carolina, and it struck at a very strange path at high tide, hitting the southern coast of New Jersey by Atlantic City, but the angle of the storm at high tide did really dramatic damage to New York Harbor and the surrounding counties. And the two specific counties that we'll be looking at today for this study is Westchester and Nassau counties, which are in close proximity to New York City, and are oftentimes places that people will either go to or through when evacuating from New York City. So some of the modeling suggests that this was a 700-year event that would occur, although with some of the predictions for sea level rise and climate change, there are now concerns that Hurricane Sandy, events like this could happen much more often. And so it knocked out power for 8 million people, including the public health agencies that we'll be discussing, which was really in many ways an unprecedented lack of power that was not planned for by the agencies. There was a 32-foot wave that was recorded in New York Harbor, which was unprecedented, and there was 3 feet of snow in West Virginia, and also a lot of snow in Nassau and Westchester counties, which we'll be discussing. So the two counties in question here, Westchester is to the north, and Nassau is here connected to Queens. And you can see in terms of the damage relating to storm surge, wind, Westchester is high, Nassau was very high because it's directly on the Atlantic Ocean. So what are the aims of what we're doing with this study? It's going on right now. So thus far, we've conducted 37 interviews with public health senior leaders in both agencies. And so we're really looking at the challenges that arose for the two agencies in preparing for Hurricane Sandy, their responses to their storm, and their efforts to recover from it. And the ultimate aim is really to elucidate how complex organizations function during times of extreme duress. And with the growing likelihood of more extreme coastal storms, this is a really important area of research because there are a lot of unknowns in terms of how public health agencies are involved in the response and what are the anticipated tasks that they'll need to be carrying out in future storms. And we're also working on identifying... Was that part of your presentation, David?
No.
Interesting. Riding on the city of New Orleans. Good morning, America. How are you? And the other theme was to identify and deliver new trainings pertaining to those gaps. And we're working on identifying those themes right now in the codes that we're developing. So the methodology, we're using a grounded theory approach. There's 37 interviews with key informants and subject matter experts. We're looking at the public health leadership at the two agencies, and we're also conducting three focus groups in each county with hospital coalitions, nursing home coalitions, and line staff. And those are important new emerging areas because several of these coalitions are starting to develop due to identifying a lot of the gaps that have occurred, but at the same time, there's also a lack of evaluation of what are the intended outcomes of these actual coalitions. So similarities between the counties. Interestingly, Westchester has the highest property taxes in the entire United States. NASA has the second highest. I think it's around $9,000 a year. There are both in New York State, which has home rule. So the counties are extremely, with a capital E, decentralized and have a very strong emphasis on local control, which we're also seeing playing out again right now with the current Ebola situation, where local jurisdictions have a lot of say in the decision-making process of public health activities. And regional travel, both places are, if there's evacuations from New York City, it's a place that a lot of the population will either be going through or to when leaving New York City. So, again, a similarity of affluence and poverty. You can see here that the percentage of 25% more defined as living in poverty, areas of Nassau County. In close proximity to them. And there's also a long history of race and class-based discrimination and disparities which tie into all of this. So some differences between the counties. NASA experienced a much more extreme storm surge than Westchester County. You can see, again, over here by NASA, populations in high-rise buildings. Westchester, on the other hand, had a very decentralized structure where you have several aspects of the public health agency that are extremely spread out. And that became an issue in terms of communication between the agencies. So there's an office in the northern part of the county, Mount Kisco, one in the center of the county, and one in the bottom of the county. So people within the different offices tended to communicate primarily with the people in their specific location. And you can see up here on the left, there's a little link there for Indian Point, which is, anyone familiar with Indian Point? It's a nuclear power plant above New York City. So a lot of the staff at this public health agency were environmental health staff who are used to training for disasters relating to Indian Point. So those same skills in some ways did and in some ways didn't translate into a response to a a severe coastal storm like Hurricane Sandy. So in terms of our evaluation of all these issues, we used a term coined by my colleague, Dr. David Abramson, of capacity, competency, and capabilities, based on the latter based on the FEP capabilities. And it's really an orchestra metaphor in terms of how this content can be really evaluated. So for capacity, there's this theme. If you think of it like an orchestra, you have the instruments themselves. So it's really how much stuff do you have? And in disaster preparedness, how it's traditionally measured is how many ambulances do you have? How much technology? How many computers do you have? So it's really the quantity of the stuff, but not necessarily an accurate measure of how it's actually being used. Competency is really the individual skills of a person who is performing usage of all that stuff. And capability is really, in terms of an orchestra or public health, is the ability for all of these different groups to coordinate together. So in an orchestra, making actual music, but in public health is a coordinated disaster response. So when looking at capacity, what were the issues that we had identified thus far in terms of capacity issues? Budget cuts and staff attrition was a huge factor. In Nassau County alone, there are several senior staff who have either retired or are in the process of retiring. So it's over 250 years in total worth of institutional memory that's leaving the public health agency. And that's also a pattern that we found that is going on throughout the United States. And so when those folks leave, what skills do new staff need to step up to the plate to handle something like a severe storm, like Sandy? Technology, really strong gaps and a lack of redundancy when there was no power. A lack of generators, a lack of radio phones, a lack of planning when cell towers went down, and few landlines within the public health building itself for making calls. And another interesting factor that we discovered was public health buildings that are actually housed on private property. And if the landlord of that building decides to close it or shut it down, the public health staff or a WIC facility have to actually leave and move to another site or work from home. And oftentimes something that was not built into the original plan. And in terms of bed capacity, some of the predictions are that 95% of the regional hospitals at baseline are going to be full, and there isn't a lot of ability to move patients around for the spillover effect in the event of a large regional disaster. So in terms of competency, some things that staff didn't know, an interesting one that we found was at both agencies in the Emergency Operations Center, there was an issue of software that could not either communicate or run successfully or have people who were really familiar with the program to order new supplies, new equipment in this system. Instead, the bulk of those requests were done in a paper-based fashion as they had always been done in the past. So this is actually a quote from a New York State Office of Emergency Management After Action report that was released by the Times Union newspaper in Albany. The most frequent source of frustration expressed by those who have used DisasterLand, which is one of those emergency software programs, on a regular basis is that personnel from other agencies as well as county emergency management agencies have not been adequately trained to use the system. Personnel that use DisasterLand every day thought it worked very well. So that is in some ways a really profound discovery and statement that staff within these counties, oftentimes due to home rule and regional lack of coordination are not able to even communicate outside of the county for requests for supplies through an electronic means. It can only be done through paper-based system. Another thing that we've discovered is that 20% of hospital beds in New York City are in zones that are likely to flood. Five hospitals were evacuated during Hurricane Irene, and eight more hospitals are in or adjacent to evacuation zone A. So this is really another huge issue for the spillover effect in terms of what happens when you have a large number of hospitals that are going to be evacuating patients either in the middle or right after a severe coastal storm hits, and how will that impact these two counties and many others in the region. And during Hurricane Irene, which happened the year before, there was actually an instance when you had one hospital that was evacuating, one nursing home that was evacuating to a nursing home in Westchester County, where the patients in that nursing home were also evacuating to another nursing home because there was not any coordination between the two facilities about this evacuation process. So this is actually the latter nursing home, which I mentioned, which is in New Rochelle, and this is an actual picture in the back of the nursing home of the oxygen tank, which is 8 feet above the water line. And during Hurricane Sandy, when it got to about 6 feet, it was determined on the fly that this nursing home needed to evacuate. So there are a lot of issues like this that are not fully baked into the plan, and there's not really a great sense of coordination among the role that public health needs to play in this process of nursing home evacuations and several other areas. A few other things I wanted to mention was in relation to socially vulnerable populations. Another area that is still a bit unclear is ESRD patients who are oftentimes working with private facilities. Where are those folks supposed to go if their center is closed? And to what extent is the public health agency either legally or morally responsible for dealing with those types of vulnerable populations? And also, to what extent are the public health agencies responsible for collecting registries of socially vulnerable groups before a disaster like this strikes? So, since this is also a youth-oriented presentation, I wanted to touch in on that. And another interesting theme that we found is in relation to social media youth and recovery, and also the role of the public health agencies in that, as several other first responder groups. We found that during Hurricane Sandy, there was really an unprecedented use of new technologies like Twitter, Facebook. I mean, I guess they're not that new anymore, but new ways to communicate and actually request help in real time from first responder organizations. And the public health agencies in many ways were oftentimes not part of that process in this region. Instead, it was really left to community groups to directly coordinate logistical care and provide immediate assistance. And we've identified some groups which we've termed as boundary spanners that oftentimes identified senior citizen groups who were stuck in high-rise buildings, a lot of elderly folks. So it was an instance where you had youth helping to coordinate aid for seniors living in high-rise buildings in areas like the Far Rockaways as well as in Nassau County. And that was really a new phenomena that we have noted during Hurricane Sandy. And one which David had mentioned before is the Rockaway Youth Task Force. So an example of new levels of communication between citizens and first responders. And so there's a picture on the bottom there of these groups just knocking on people's doors. And the key thing to remember is that these are seniors in high-rise buildings that really haven't received any attention from the New York City Office of Emergency Management or any other first responder groups for sometimes up to 2 weeks. So they're just sitting there alone, and the youth groups were in many ways the first to respond. So in closing, regional coordination is essential, but is still lacking in many areas. One of the new things we're finding is that there are many coalitions that are bubbling up, but we also have to consider what the metrics are for success. And we also have to think about, is this the new normal? Is sea level rise and increased storm surges going to require a new approach to planning efforts? And to what extent and how can we identify what those new skills are needed? What are the capacities, competencies, and capabilities needed to make that happen? Thank you.
Thank you.